Hello and welcome to episode 10 of The Call of Nature. We are a grassroots podcast about nature, wildlife and the environment based here in the UK. And we are for everyday people, just like you. So if you're a new listener, welcome. It's nice to have you here. And if you are an existing listener and have listened before, then welcome back. And thanks for listening. I'm joined today by regular host Dr. Gareth. Hi, Gareth.
Hiya.
And also by a new team member, Amanda Whittington. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, everyone. Hello.
Oh, it's great to have you here, Amanda. We've been very excited about getting you involved, so welcome to the show.
Me too.
And as your first fun job, would you please read out our legal disclaimer?
Absolutely. So the views and opinions expressed in The Call of Nature are those of whoever expressed them, and they do not reflect those of any other organisation or agency.
Absolutely, word perfect. That was brilliant. Great. And it means that, Gareth, you can now say whatever you want without fear of getting sacked. That's nice, isn't it?
Fantastic.
Well, probably anyway, within reason, I suppose. So we've got some great stuff on the show today. First up, we've got a chat that we had with Amy from a band called Isyla, and she talks about their music and how it was inspired by nature. Then Amanda's going to tell us some stuff about everyone's favourite bit of wildlife, wasps. And then next up, we've got a chat that we had with Saran and Adi and about their wild romance and how they enjoy experiencing nature together. So before that, what we like to do each episode is find out what cool nature stuff people have seen over the last week or so. Gareth, what sort of stuff have you seen recently?
Not so much seen, but heard. So it's the time of the year when you're having a shower and we've got like the extractor for our boilers like just next to it. And because the warmth is coming out, you get starlings that perch on it to warm up in the morning. And you hear lovely mimic calls. There are mostly bird alarms around here. But it's amazing. So you hear, and you see big flocks of them going around at the moment. So you get these amazing, it's my favourite bird starlings. So you see them everywhere. They look a bit like what the inside of a nightclub looks like when it's got a glitter ball going around. It's amazing. But I was looking a bit at the songs I was trying to work out, and no one's quite sure why they mimic things. But it's interesting where the females will tend to share songs between themselves, and the males will share some songs between them, but the males refuse to learn any songs off females. So it's quite interesting, really.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah, there's some possible tenuous parallels to be drawn there with humans, but let's not go into that. But they're lovely, aren't they? Starlings in the winter are just wonderful things because they do tend to kind of like get together, don't they, quite a lot. Amanda, what have you seen over the last few weeks?
Well, mine's also bird related. It's just got to be the return of the robin to my garden. Strange, I don't seem to see them for quite a long time during the summer. And then suddenly kind of autumn kicks in and then there they are, the beautiful song. And we've got one that sits on a buddleia bush and kind of sings his little heart out. Kind of looks like he's looking at you while he's singing. But yeah, it's just really nice to hear their sound again. And it's kind of marks for me kind of the beginning of sort of crisp autumn days and that classic kind of robin on a spade in the snow kind of postcard moment, which kind of looking forward to that later on in the year.
Yeah, that's lovely. So it sounds like you're getting a little personal performance in your garden.
But just, Gareth, I just wondered actually, do robins seem to come out more in the autumn or...?
Do you know what? I don't know. I wonder if like they switch their, you know, if they've ended the breeding, they're trying to fatten up for winter. You know, a lot of birds will be seen in the garden looking for any opportunity to, you know, get underneath when people are turning over their gardens, but not sure.
Oh, we'll have to do some internet research about that and find out.
So, Chris, have you got something? Is it bird related or are you going to mix it up a bit?
It is bird related.
Oh, dear.
So that's three strikes for the birds this week. My highlight of the recent weeks was actually today. I went on a nice walk down by the river in the canal near my house, and I saw two, not one, but two kingfishers.
Oh, wow.
Which is just fantastic. It's always like a magical treat to see like the flash of bright blue of a kingfisher. Mm-hmm. But to see it twice in one day was really good. But I also had a low light of the week, which came straight after. I was with my stepdad at the time, and he actually saw a third kingfisher and was just directing me to where it was. And my phone rang and it was Pete, and he scared it off. Pete prevented me seeing my third kingfisher of the day, which was a bit disappointing, really. But I did let him know that that's what had happened, and I think he pretended to be apologetic anyway.
It's unforgivable.
Yeah, totally yeah. Unforgivable. Yeah, but there were dippers down there as well. There's a dipper is probably a less familiar bird to some of our listeners, but they're fast stream dwelling birds, like dumpy little brown birds, but with a white, bright white bib, and they go under the water and feed on insects under the water, and they bob up and down, hence their name, dippers. And yeah, I saw a couple of those today as well. So yeah, birds all round this week. That's nice.
Great.
So there we go.
So now we're going to do something we haven't done the show before. We're going to listen to music that's been inspired by nature and environmental issues. So let's take a listen.
Oh, the world is full of shiny stuff, and I can never get enough. It's not the only trouble that joy faces when I have thrown the box away. And I want, but I can't buy a clean sky, dripping in stormlight, a sea singing with life, a spinning autumn leaf, the breath of an oak tree, the first flower you picked me, the tan of a bird's wing, banking on the breeze. Do we have a program deep inside?
Well, that was lovely, wasn't it, folks? And that's an excerpt of the track I Want from a new musical duo called Isyla, and that's spelled Isyla. And we're talking today with Amy, who's a songwriting mum who's just returned after a long gap and is back songwriting with purpose. Thanks for joining us today, Amy.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Hi, Amy.
Hi.
As I said, you're a musical writer with a purpose, Amy. What is your purpose?
Well, we're trying to use music as a tool to get people to look more closely at the climate crisis. It's obviously a huge and a scary topic. And our hope is that people might be more receptive to the messages if they're hearing them through music. There's some sort of magic thing, I think, that happens with music and the brain. So we're trying to sort of sneak the ideas in that way, really. And our goal is really to get as big a following as possible so that the message can be delivered to as many people as possible.
Yeah, I think we're really aligned on that front. I don't know if you, the listener, has realised, but we're aiming at people who might not necessarily be super connected to nature already. And it's a bit like that for you, but with climate change, isn't it?
Mm, absolutely, yeah. So I try, with the songwriting, I try to do quite a sort of variety of different approaches. But often I've taken the perspective of, I've sort of stepped into someone else's shoes as a way of delivering the message, because I know that storytelling can be very powerful. It can be a very powerful way of getting people to understand and empathize with other people, to hear someone's personal story or their personal journey. So that's kind of one of the devices that I've used when writing the lyrics.
They're certainly they're very powerful, and they're beautiful songs as well. Pete and I have both been enjoying them. If our listeners want to have a listen, where would they go?
Well, the album Where She Walks is available pretty much anywhere. But if you want a quick way of getting the links, our website is www.azila.org. And on there are the links to all the music and also videos. We've got a few, about six, I think, videos now. Mm. And there's social media sites as well, Azila_official, Twitter and Instagram.
Cool. Well, we encourage all our listeners to go and have a watch and a listen. I'm interested. How did you arrive at this goal for your music? Was it that you wanted to do music and then you decided to write music about this as your cause, or did you come from the cause first and then decide to use music?
It was very much the second. So the seeds were sown in January last year when Greta gave that incredible speech, Our House is on Fire. And it's not like I didn't know there was a climate crisis, but it was too big for me to sort of take it into my heart, really. I've got two young children and I was just pushing it away. I heard that speech. And from that moment onwards, there was this little voice that grew louder and louder and louder inside my head. And by the October, when I heard that Extinction Rebellion were doing their action, the voice was sort of screaming in my head and I just couldn't ignore it anymore. And I sort of stopped running. And I went to one of these Heading for Extinction talks that Extinction Rebellion do and was horrified, but also quite exhilarated, because I thought, I have a role here. I have to do something. I felt so strongly.
Yeah.
And I decided really last minute to go up to London and take part in the action. And in the on the train, on the way up, I thought, what can I do? What do I have? What can I do? And I thought, songwriting. I can write songs. I hadn't really written songs for 20 years. I just wrote them when I was a teenager, really, in my very early 20s. And yeah, so I wrote a song, the first song, on the train on the way up. And then I hooked up with Lizzie, who is the wonderful singer of Azila, at one of the XR meetings. We met up for a coffee with no agenda other than just sharing ideas. I'd actually barely even knew that she sung. And over that conversation, we decided to make an album. And the next day I wrote Daughter, which is one of the songs on the album. And over the next 2.5 weeks, I wrote all the songs for the album. So they were just all in there and it was just like a bang explosion. They all came out.
So that's a really great story. And I think, Pete, you might agree that it resonates with us because we have similar goals. And with this podcast, we're just trying to do what comes to us more naturally.
Talking about stuff.
Chatting to people, yeah. So if people want to help you out with what you're doing, what can they do?
They can share the videos, share the songs, talk to people, tell people about the music. I am really kind of making this up as I go along. I have no experience of the music industry. I can do with all the advice that anyone has got to give me. One thing I think the songs would really suit is soundtracks for TV programs, documentaries, films. But I tend to sort of find out about these wonderful films just as they're coming out. So Sync, it's called. This is a new word to me, Sync. But if anyone has any expertise in Sync or any advice to give me about how to go about doing that, how to get a publisher, I just don't know where to start. It's just a completely new world to me. That would be really helpful.
Well, hopefully there'll be some listeners out there who will have some knowledge about that. And I'm sure they'll have the will to help you out if they can.
Mm-hmm. That would be amazing.
Well, Amy, thanks so much for coming and chatting to me and Pete about your music. I've found it really interesting and I'm definitely going to go and listen to some more of it. And I look forward to hearing some new stuff when it comes out.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, it's been a pleasure, Amy. And now let's play out with another track from the album, and that's Home. Thanks again, Amy.
Thank you. A story in which I'll play my part,
and rap with song that when I'm gone, this story ever may go on. Home, my love is home. Oh. It is flown away to places that our voices never reach, and it is lost amongst the willows and the leaves that lie beneath, and it is trampled on the hillside where the deer graze over. It flows into frozen rivers where the fish dive under.
So that was great talking with Amy from Isyla. Just to recap, you spell Isyla, Isyla. Their album is called Where She Walks, and they've got a new single out in November called Only the Humans. And you can find out more about the band at isyla.org. Also, if you work in the music industry and you've got any experience or advice for Amy, then yeah, get in touch with her and help her out. That'd be great. So from something that sounds very pleasant, we're moving now to something which not everyone finds pleasant, which is wasps. And Amanda's going to tell us some stuff about that.
Great. Well, I thought I'd do some investigating into wasps to see if I can persuade anyone that there's more to their sting and ruining picnics. So I've heard lots of people, even nature lovers, sort of say, I can't stand wasps and they're just nasty and wish they'd just leave us alone. And I know they can be really annoying, but they've also got a good side too. I mean, doesn't everything? Well, one, we all know bees are good pollinators, but also wasps are really important pollinators too. And they're also really important in pest control. In fact, nearly every pest insect on Earth is preyed upon by a wasp species, either for its food or as a host for its parasitic larvae. This is pretty gruesome. It's where they kind of lay their eggs inside something like a caterpillar and the larvae develop inside. I won't go into all the details there, but and I'm not sure that fact's going to do my argument any favours. But if we didn't have these around, we would have far too many pests and we'd have less crops, not enough food, and nature would be out of balance. So they're incredibly diverse, and there's around 30,000 identified species coming in many different colours, from the usual yellow and brown ones that we see a lot in this country to metallic blue and bright red. There's two kind of main types of wasp, which are the social wasps and solitary wasps. Social wasps account for about 1,000 of the species, including the colony builders like yellow jackets and hornets that we know well in this country. Now, usually the ones probably that we see are the yellow jackets. I think the German wasp as well is quite common in this country too. Mm. The social wasps are started in the spring by a queen who's fertilised the year before, and she survives the winter by hibernating in a warm place. And when she comes out, she builds a small nest and she rears a brood of worker females. And by the way, it's only the female wasps which sting. Their stingers are actually modified egg-laying organs.
Oh.
So that's a fact that I didn't actually know till I did this research.
No, I didn't know that.
Mm. Some really interesting things I found out as well is that wasps can recognise each another wasp by identifying their unique facial patterns. So they can actually identify the characteristics of each individual wasp. And they've also been proven to be capable of using logic, and they can use two separate pieces of information to draw a conclusion, which is the first suggestion of an invertebrate to use logical deduction. So during this time of year, you might have noticed wasps sort of buzzing around, looking a bit intoxicated, maybe a bit drunk. And that's because they probably are drunk. They're actually getting drunk on fermented sugars in rotting fruit. I don't know if they do it for fun, but it's quite possible.
That's why we do it,
yeah,
I suppose. Wasp cider.
They might be kind of enjoying it, and they do have a notorious kind of sweet tooth. They can't resist sugary drinks, and so you must remember to keep your drinks covered and your cider or fizzy drinks if you don't want to swallow one of these guys. And one newspaper put it, wasps get tanked up on booze and fighty like lager louts, which made me laugh. I did actually, last year around this time of year, I've always been... of the type to say, you know, stay still. If a wasp's around you, don't panic. And I said that to my son, and a wasp actually crawled on his face and then stung him. So that was a bit of a shock.
Yeah, he's never going to believe any of your wasp advice again, right?
No, but I still think it's better than trying to shoo them off. My partner prefers shooing them off, but I'm sure they come back when people do that a bit more.
I've always quite enjoyed seeing the blind panic that wasps send some people into.
People do really freak out, don't they?
Maybe that says more about me. I've always found wasps quite interesting. We got sent a thing on social media the other week. That was a picture. What was it? It was a, Gareth, you remember this. Was it an ivy wasp grabber?
It was indeed.
Ivy wasp grabber, what's that?
Well, fill us in, Gareth, do you remember?
Yeah, the ivy wasp grabber is actually a sawfly, I think it is. And it's a parasite of a wasp.
Ah.
They look like wasps, but they grab wasps and bees. The females do, and inject their eggs into their abdomens.
I know, it's pretty disgusting, isn't it?
Yeah. So they grow inside, and then as they get bigger and bigger and ready to emerge, they release all these chemicals that change the behaviour of the hosts.
Oh, yeah.
And they bury down in themselves down into the ground, and then the parasite bursts out. It's horrible, really.
It's gross.
It's a thick-headed fly, just to correct it. Yeah, and they basically linger around flowers, wait for the wasps to come along, whatever it is, and they ambush them mid-flight and lay an egg in their head.
What's in their head?
Oh, my God.
Or abdomen, you know, wherever
they can get it in.
You get.
Yeah.
I'm really wondering if I've persuaded any of the listeners that wasps are to be loved. I'm hoping so. You could always let us know on social media your thoughts on wasps. We'd love to hear.
Yeah. I remember, there's another thing I remember about wasps that I read. I think there's something like over 7,000 species in the UK or something, and
we only
really see two of them. Most people are only familiar with your common wasp and I think the German wasp that you mentioned. But those two as well, as adults, they don't eat anything apart from sugary nectar.
When
they're hunting for grubs and things like that, which you can sometimes see wasps carrying off caterpillars and stuff like that, it's to feed their grubs rather than themselves.
Yes, actually, I was going to mention that. And also, apparently they've also got these thin wasp waists and that constrains their gut. I don't know if that's true, but that's something I read online. And the worker wasps chew up the prey and feed it to the larva. And then, amazingly, the larvae then produce like a sugar-rich spit that the workers can drink.
Incredible. Sounds lovely.
When they have to leave the nest, when the workers leave the nest, once the queen stops laying and once she's decided to produce some more males and queens for the following year, then they're all off. All the workers are off to fend for themselves, and that's when they get on the lookout for sugar.
I always think wasps are massively underrated, and it's also one of my favourite ever scientific experiments. I mean, you mentioned, Amanda, they've got this ability to learn and have logic, and someone did a test where they basically showed some wasps through a screen of wasps fighting, and the wasps managed to remember which wasps were the hardest, and when they were mixed together, then they'd avoid the ones who were very good at fighting.
Wow.
So wasps have an ability to remember who's actually a bit of a nutter and you don't want to fight.
They're just quite human, really, aren't they? Feels like they're quite human in a weird way. But yeah, if you do really want to escape them and you want to drink your cider or sugary drink wasp-free, then you're going to have to head to the Antarctic because it's the only place on Earth which doesn't have wasps.
So if you do have a real phobia of wasps, and a lot of people do, there's the solution. Move to Antarctica.
Next up, we're having a chat with Saran, who got in touch with us via Instagram, and her fella AD, who's from the band Crystalla. And they share a love of nature, and they told us a little bit about what you can do to make a difference.
Hi, Saran and AD. Thank you for joining me today.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us.
Well, you're both very welcome. So, everybody, we've got a story of romance and nature today. Saran, how did your love of nature come from a romantic situation?
Well, AD and I have known each other for many years, and usually being very loud in the field because we're both very big music fans and especially festival fans. And when we got together, AD told me how much he liked birding. And so now we're not just very loud in the field, we're also very quiet in fields too.
That's awesome. And so it was a festival that you proposed at, AD, is that right?
Yeah, it was at a festival called Bloodstock, and I proposed to her during Hatebreed, which is not everybody's cup of tea, I admit, but it was perfect for us.
I love it. It's so romantic. And you're the original nature fan of the pair, aren't you, AD? So how did it come that your love of nature rubbed off on Saran?
Well, when I was driving, I used to look up see the red kites that we're lucky enough to have flying around near where we live. And there's also buzzards as well, and I would try to identify them. And
it was just safer for me to learn them so that he could keep his eye on the road. And then I just fell into it. I fell in love with the raptors, and I fell in love with birding.
Great. And haven't you moved on to dragonflies?
I've become a member of the Wildlife Trust during lockdown, and their emails were sending out lots of little action things that you could do. And I got really involved with them, and I enjoyed taking photos of what I was learning and putting them on my social media. And through me taking part in, say, Action for Insects, I've got AD interested in dragonflies as well. And this time last year, we didn't know what a dart was, and now we know the difference between a common one and a ruddy one.
Yeah, so it's just sort of like bouncing off of each other and learning stuff all the time. It's a very cool little journey.
It's great.
Yeah, that's great. And also romantic. It's lovely how our love for nature does tend to often come via other people, doesn't it? And it certainly seems to be the case with you two guys, which is cool. So I believe another one of the things that you've been doing together is going to reserves together. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And we've got a couple to recommend, one which is local, which is called Summer Lees. And it's in Northamptonshire, and it's a gravel pit that's been turned into a reserve. And it's got a main lake and a scrape, and it's got wetlands and grasslands and woodlands and some really interesting resident species, but some real brilliant summer and winter migrant visitors as well. And this year we got to see a spoonbill.
Yeah, along with bitterns as well.
Yeah, I've seen a bittern there, and it's where I've taken most of my photos of insects and especially dragonflies this year. It's an amazing place.
That's great. And for any listeners who don't know, these are big water birds, aren't they? And not generally birds you're going to see, are they?
Well, they're huge.
Day to day.
They are huge. They're very impressive.
Yeah. That's awesome. And what about you, AD? What's your favourite place?
Yeah, the place I'd like to recommend is RSPB Frampton Marsh. It's basically two different habitats. The first one is the salt marsh that leads out onto the Wash. And during the winter, you'll see things like hen harriers, merlins and short-eared owls. And then across the other side from the seawall, they converted some potato fields about 15 years ago into scrapes and low-level lakes and things for ducks and waders. And they have so many different species turn up there that they always win what used to be an RSPB competition for how many species. So I'd absolutely recommend going to Frampton Marsh. It's a brilliant place.
That's great. And so you've got a Wildlife Trust place there, an RSPB place. And I know from speaking with you earlier that you're both members of both organisations, aren't you?
Absolutely. We think it's really important as well, because it doesn't just raise money for good causes. It keeps these places alive. And I've learned lots, especially the emails and the actions that you can get involved with. They're just brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, without places like, without organisations like those two, RSPB and the Wildlife Trust, Summer Lees wouldn't exist and Frampton Marsh wouldn't exist. But when you join those places, you're also sort of adding your weight and your voice to a larger body so that they can lobby for change for good. So I think it's definitely worth the money and the time.
Absolutely worth every penny.
To doing those things if you can do, definitely.
Well, that's great. And I know that both the other guys and myself would echo that. Conservation, a wonderful thing, and nature, as we know, needs all the help it can get. So I'd like to applaud you both for being members of both of those, and to thank you very much for coming on and telling us all about it today.
No problem, it's been brilliant, thank you.
Oh, that was really lovely to hear how they've fallen in love with each other and nature. Really nice story. Gareth, could you tell us what a wader scrape is at all?
Yeah, so if you imagine waders, it's basically the birds that have long legs and like sort of beaking around in water. So one of the problems you've got in the UK is a lot of our farmland birds decline because we haven't got, you know, standing patches of water. It doesn't make for good farmland. So basically what a scrape is you take a sort of very shallow layer of soil off so water can accumulate. And what you do then is you create loads of great habitat for lots of the invertebrates that these waders want to feed on. So what you really do is go around a field, you make lots of patterns and clusters of different sort of indentations, and then the water comes, fills them up naturally, and you create lots of lovely edge habitat for plants and for vertebrates. And then when the farmland birds and wading birds come in, they've got lots of places to feed. And that's what a scrape is. In the old days, you'd have to sort of do it with a spade, then they started doing it with diggers, and now you get these fantastic machines that can churn out sort of 200 meters in an hour. So it's come on a bit, but a really good conservation intervention.
Wow, I'd like to see more of those around the country.
Yeah, there's a lot of nature reserves that have sort of wetland habitat state that you can often see wader scrapes at. They're just sort of posh puddles, really, aren't they, Gareth?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something you'd have found naturally a lot more in the countryside pre sort of us demanding more food off the land.
Yeah. One thing I really like with the chat that Pete had with Surrounding 80 was how enthusiastic they were about talking passionately about how they believed that supporting conservation organizations was a really good way to help nature out. And I just really like to echo that because I've worked in a few conservation organizations, and Pete and Gareth have too, but I know that they do some amazing work. So one of the best things that you can actually do for wildlife is to give them a bit of money. I know, Gareth, you wouldn't disagree with that, would you?
No, I mean, the challenge is bigger than ever. And although there seems to be like increased awareness, actually funding for wildlife action in the UK has been declining for quite a long time. So yeah, every penny counts.
So that's it for episode 10. Next time, we have a new team member joining us again, another addition to the team. So that's going to be Darwood. And we're very excited to be chatting to him. Now, if you've enjoyed what you've heard today and you want to get in touch with the show, then you can find us through all of the social media channels and share your experiences with us. We'd love to hear them. And we'd love to have you on the show. So thank you very much to Amanda and Gareth for joining me today. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks, Gareth.
thanks, bye. Yeah.
Thanks, bye. Yes, bye. It's been great fun, and we look forward to making episode 11 soon. Bye.